Welcome to the Reach Out podcast, the show where we explore how researchers at Aalborg University and elsewhere use digital technologies to disseminate their knowledge, as well as connect with different audiences. This podcast is supported by generous funding from the Digitalization Strategy at Aalborg University Denmark and produced at Aalborg University Business School. If you want to connect, follow us on Twitter at reachout, that's reachout with A-A-U-T in the end. And now let's jump straight into the interview.
Today, my guest is Florian Echtler. So welcome to you and thanks so much for joining this podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Great. Pleasure is all ours. So why don't we get started before we go deeper into how do you communicate your research? Mm-hmm. Maybe briefly what your research is about, in which field you are, and maybe also a bit just to get to know you a bit, your background, so where you're coming from and how you ended up where you are now.
All right. Okay. So I'll try. So yeah, my name is Florian Echtler. I'm since about half a year, I'm an associate professor at Aalborg University, and I'm at the Department for Computer Science in the Human Centered Computing Group. That means my field of research is on a very high level is HCI, human computer interaction. That's already kind of a difficult field to pin down because there's aspects of computer science, there's aspects of psychology, of engineering, sometimes even a little bit of art in there. And so this is actually like hard to nail down specifically, but my background is more in computer science. So I studied computer science in Germany, in Munich, to be specific. I also did my PhD there. After that, I briefly worked at Siemens, and then I was a junior professor at the Bauhaus Universität in Weimar in Germany, which is also quite famous for architecture and design and so on. And now, since half a year or so, I'm in Aalborg. And the focus of my research is, if you want to kind of pin it down with a single word, is decentralization. So today we are handing out a lot of our data to big corporations and cloud services and so on. And this is of course convenient, but it's maybe not the perfect solution as we've seen recently for various reasons. And so a lot of what I'm focusing in is about how can we get back our data under our own control and do so in a way that's also basically usable for people, because there's lots of solutions that basically require you to host your own server and whatnot. And that's of course not something that everybody wants to do. So yeah, about research dissemination, I guess that's also kind of a difficult topic in this area, because as I said, HCI is quite mixed. So there's lots of different kind of subfields in there. And so my background is mostly on the computer science side of things, but there's other people who might have quite different backgrounds and still call themselves also HCI researchers. But I'm more looking at things from a computer science perspective. So I think one thing that's important that not everybody who's working in a different field actually knows is that computer science has a very strong focus on conferences. So there's actually not so much. So the conferences are much higher profile than in many other fields. So there's what in computer science, a conference publication is often more or less equivalent to a journal publication in another field. And so there's actually been quite a lot of upheaval over the last year, because of course there aren't no conferences. I'm basically at a conference right now in parallel, because it's taking place virtually, of course. So under other circumstances, I would probably now be in Salzburg right now, but that didn't happen. So I just had like even more Zoom meetings this week. And it's not quite the same, I think. So at an actual conference, I would probably talk a lot more to people about what they've been doing and what I've been doing, and just having coffee with them. And that just doesn't work quite the same when you're just sitting at home in front of your computer, I guess. So that's kind of an issue at the moment, I think. And I did get the impression that everybody's really, really keen on getting back to actually meeting people physically. So maybe in the second half of this year, who knows? But to kind of compensate for that, I guess I'm quite active on Twitter at the moment. So that's also maybe not such a formal medium for making research public, but it's kind of a nice substitute. And so my PhD students and I are, of course, still focusing on actually getting like a regular publication, of course, because that's what they need for their research. But once we're at that point, then we often try to like make it a little more public on Twitter. And so in general, I honestly have to say that over the last year, also with COVID in the background, and so I've kind of lost track of how many different communications platforms things are happening on. So some of my collaborators use Slack, then others use Discord, then we have Teams here in Aalborg. Then we have Skype, and I'm really kind of starting to lose track which platform I need to talk to whom. So I think in some cases it's actually an advantage to have like this focus on digital channels, because then you can actually talk to more people than, because you can't like travel to 10 conferences per year, but if you go to 10 more Zoom meetings, then that's kind of okay, kind of doable. So for some people, I guess it's actually an advantage. I personally still would kind of like to actually go to a proper conference at some point again. But right now, I think it's more or less the best we can do. And what else, apart from that, of course, I'm using VPN. So I'm actually quite happy that it's more or less like collected all my data on its own from Scopus. So I didn't have to put in everything I did previously by hand. So that's actually quite nice. And I still have my like own personal homepage. Yeah, I think that's mostly it. So that's like the main channels I can think of right now at the moment. So I also have a Google Scholar profile, but that's kind of not something I have much control over, because it's just like whatever Google collects ends up in there. But that's not something I can kind of control actively, I think. At least I haven't found a way yet to do that. So.
I mean, there are some ways to polish it all a bit. So you can sometimes rename or merge different articles. So for me, it was often bothering me that like I have different versions of the same article are there as different entities. So I merged them all together. So a bit of fine tuning. But yeah, it's rather out of our control. Yeah, I mean, you talked about so many interesting issues. And I mean, one of the interesting things to start with, where you're coming from, you're already coming from a domain, I would say, which is just interesting. It's an interesting discussion to follow generally for us as academics, but also for a more general audience, the public. So when you talk about when you come with words like human-computer interaction, and then more specifically what you're doing, what are the implications, and what are alternative models to this strong centralization of all kind of IT services, compute, but also data. I mean, that's interesting to start with, and you could with some random person on the street have a discussion with them. That's not necessarily true for all field of research, but particularly there, I find it's important to think about what are channels, how we reach people which are not necessarily from the same field of research. You know, at the moment, at least, like it's on everyone's mind, the social impact of research. We now have, in addition to our usual journal rankings and citation counts, also all this alternative impact assessments, which how often is your research shared on Twitter, whatever. So long story short, I see you're maintaining Twitter a bit more now. So that's a bit like sourdough. That's one of the things we started to maintain more since we have more time. But however, did you? What else are you doing, or what else are you planning to do to engage the more general audience with the research you are doing?
Well, so one thing I'm kind of working on, which to be honest, I have kind of a hard time seeing when you write a regular research paper to make that accessible to the general audience. So I'm always thinking about writing blog posts, but that's somehow not something I really get around to. The one thing I'm doing quite often, and which I also encourage my students to do, is to make the actual like source code that relates to a project, to make that open source so that everybody can actually use it. And what we're also doing is to kind of take a bit of extra money whenever we have a publication that's actually from a funded project, and then pay for this open access fee. So that because in my head, actually the most of this research is paid for by the public in the end. And so I kind of think it's just only fair if the public also has access to it and doesn't have to actually pay again to just read it. So we try to make everything open access and also put the source code, for example, on GitHub, so that at least everybody has the option to do something with our research and build on that, for example. And that's something where in my opinion, which is happening far too little, even in computer science. So most people are happy once they've published the paper, and then they kind of tend to forget about it and move on to the next one. And so we actually had an experiment two years ago or so, when we tried to ask authors of other papers for like the materials necessary to reproduce the stuff they did in the other papers. And there was not a very good return on that. So a lot of people actually, some people don't answer, some people actually don't have the data anymore, and all these kinds of things happen. And for that reason, I think it's worth the little bit of extra effort to make it properly public, all the bits, not just the paper, right away. So this is also not something where we're like entirely successful every time, but at least it's something I think more people should try. And so it's unfortunate that this is kind of connected to extra costs. So it costs money and it costs time, and that's both things that aren't in very large supply usually. So I think it's still kind of reasonable. So the main publisher we've been using is ACM, Association of Computing Machinery, which is actually a non-profit, and they take, I think, $600 per article as open access fee, which isn't like peanuts, but it's also a lot less than some other publishers are taking. So it's still kind of reasonable. And but sometimes you don't even have like extra $600 lying around, and what then what? So this is still something where I see a lot of like potential for improvement. We're trying to kind of make the best out of the situation as it is at the moment. But I guess there's, I mean, you can, for example, you can always like kind of put the I think it's called the author version of your article on VBN or something. And then usually Google, I think, will find it after a couple of days, and then everybody can read it as well. But it's not quite the same as when you go, when you like look for the official version of the article, and then you end up on the publisher website, and then it says, okay, yeah, you have to pay $150 to read this. And then probably most of the people who are, for example, not at the university, but work at a company and don't have a library access for this, they then probably won't bother. And so this, I think, is also something where there's quite a gap actually between like doing research that benefits the public and the actual availability of that research to the public. So yeah, this is also something where I think there's quite a bit of room for improvement.
Definitely. And I think like kind of the whole discipline or like kind of the whole scientific community has a long way to go there as still. And I mean, you mentioned open access article, which I find a great thing to do on the one hand. On the other hand, I'm also a bit skeptical about it because I find it intuitively, then we have to pay extra that our research is available to the public. But anyhow, whatever model we take, I find it also important. And I see to make it accessible to practitioners, but also to other researchers in like kind of in less wealthy nations. It might sound silly for many on first glance, but I, in a couple of projects, was working with a lot of researchers in developing countries, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, and for them, and then again, particularly their PhD students and whatsoever, they appreciate it a lot, and it's enormously helpful for them. You also talked about code and open code on GitHub and all of that. And I find that's also something we particularly in social science are lacking behind. So you talked about computer science. I didn't think that it's that a big issue, that it also is. That's kind of interesting because you probably heard of a lot of media attention toward let's say a decent amount of media attention towards what we call the reproducibility crisis in social science, that many, of particularly the former statistical exercises, which are based on surveys and whatsoever, are nowadays not constructible. And therefore, for sure, questioning some of the fundamental theories we came up over the centuries. So nowadays, I think this is a really important push, but I think it has two, there are two things to it, because we, when I talk with my colleagues, so are you putting your, it's mainly about less about reproducing the analysis, so putting your code on GitHub. It is more about open data, so giving others access to data, which for sure sometimes has some restriction. Can you do it or not? But I actually agree only to a certain extent. I find providing code is even more important than providing data, because that actually enables you to, even with your own data, reproduce the analysis. But however, I also see myself, so in my own projects, I have to admit, I'm not as good as I would like to. We have a couple of interesting papers where all the time getting asked, so yeah, you link to your GitHub, but on your GitHub, I find only a bit of gibberish. And I was like, yeah, I still wanted to maintain it. Up to now, it's just a bit of gibberish. So I don't know. Do you have any advice, best practice, how to get a kind of a more thorough process there? Because I see I really want to do that, but I only succeed sometimes. Because as you said, time is always a constraint. And to run something on your own versus to make it nice and reconstructible for other, it's always an extra effort.
So my kind of philosophy is, so one of my PhD students is really good at like making this actually work and putting it online in a way that people can actually use it. And so for my own stuff, so far, I've usually just like put on GitHub whatever mess I basically had on my computer at the moment. And then I've tried to kind of make it nicer over time. And also that's not really working out all the time, but I still think it's better to have at least like a bit of an unorganized pile than nothing at all. Because it's still probably, so even in computer science, it's still probably the case that you cannot really like download it from GitHub and then immediately use it. So you will always have to do a bit of development on your own. And then it's still better if you have like the old code at least to look at and see how the other people solved this stuff than having to start completely from scratch again yourself. So I've seen actually quite a number of papers where some sort of user interface was built, and then the people who wrote that paper wanted to compare it with an older one. And what they ended up doing is basically just reading the paper and rebuilding everything the other authors did already from zero. And then, of course, it won't be exactly the same thing. And so it's kind of questionable if this is like an actually a fair comparison then. And so I'm kind of the opinion that even if you just have like an unorganized pile of stuff, then it's still better than nothing at all, because if you can actually look inside the code, then that will definitely be able to answer some questions that you just cannot answer by reading the paper, because there's like not enough space usually in the paper to cover every little detail. And the code kind of actually answers the leftover questions in a sense. So, but yes, I've definitely like also have kind of a list of things on GitHub that are more or less messy and that could definitely use a little more time to polish them. But where I'm really happy, I think, is that at least I've managed to kind of convey the same feelings to my PhD students, and they're way better at this than I am. So at least that's kind of working out, I guess. But yes, it's definitely something that takes up a lot of time, and that's not time everybody has. So that's kind of, we actually did a survey on this. So this was a publication I had 2 years ago, where we did a survey on why people don't like put out more source code and stuff like that. And a lot of the answers basically were come on, another thing I have to do. I'm already like overworked as hell already. And so it would be nicer if this sort of like open data, open code and so on, if people would actually consider that as part of the paper and not like part of the actual publication, and not something that's like maybe quickly tossed on GitHub afterwards. So, and then people would probably also be much more willing to put in the extra effort. So that's at least what I'm kind of hoping for. And the only thing I kind of can do at the moment is to be a good example and try to do that. I think like the overall kind of publication culture, even in computer science, is still mostly looking at, okay, the paper is done, then let's move on to the next thing. And if somebody really wants to reuse this, then well, they can rebuild it on their own. And that's also quite a waste of time, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting because I mean, I often have the same, so I'm guilty of the same, but at least I try to get better. And sometimes you find yourself caught up a bit into this whole academic game of publication. And we kind of forget that what we initially wanted to do is develop cool things which are helpful for others and document them in papers, exactly, rather than to write papers which eventually might become cool and useful for others. Mm-hmm. And I mean, exactly. I see it with my work as well, the few things where I really went the extra mile and put it nicely on GitHub and documented it nicely in a nice markdown and everything and made it reconstructable, this research flies way better. It is very nicely shareable also on LinkedIn, Twitter, whatsoever. People look at it, people reshare it, people give you comments, people cite you for that. So after all, we just have to get it in our head. But exactly, what you said before, that's actually a good point. And I thought about the same, that for us, not senior, but a bit of like kind of already like a somewhat the old, I don't want to call it old school, but not entirely young anymore. Let's call it like that.
Yeah.
To build this habit, okay, you know, it's always hard to teach old dogs new tricks. But however, encouraging your PhD students seems to be one of the ways to go. Because as you said, I also figured out they're way better and they're more engaged and motivated of doing that. And that's how I usually start now when I'm working with a PhD student, every project. So first set up a GitHub and then start your first documentation, and then I take a look at it. And they will usually keep this habit, and in the end, the result is always a really nice GitHub. So maybe in the best case, we would do it on our own. But if not, then maybe we just try to make the new generation be a good example.
Exactly.
Okay, what another topic we could talk about, you talked about it quickly before, and that's also something. So while I'm hosting this podcast, I'm not claiming to be an expert in any of those topics. It's for me discovery and self-discovery as for anyone else, I guess. But that's what we do in Corona times. So I obviously also try to be more active on Twitter with sometimes more and sometimes less success. And also with, let's say, with a bit of a up and down, a seasonality of efforts, let's call it like that. Because for me, some people seem to be natural for, it seems to be natural for them to be a lot of, to have a lot of activity on and steer a lot of discussions on Twitter. For others, not. I see it's a good medium, but I have a really hard time to get myself motivated to share my stuff and be, I don't know, I often reshare things which I find interesting, but I seldomly get myself to produce like genuine own content. So do you have any advices or anything you learned there in your time so far?
Well, so I've just like had a discussion with a colleague about that, with Nikolai Hansen. I think he's actually like running the AAU Forsker Twitter account this week or last week, I don't know. And he was kind of mentioning that he's he has kind of a difficult time splitting between his like his Twitter personality and his research personality. But I think that's not actually necessary. So I think the nice thing about Twitter is that it's not quite as formal as like having a discussion session at a conference or having stuff like LinkedIn or whatever. So there's everything is always quite formal and everybody's like only proclaiming their successes. So and Twitter is a bit more like Wild West in a sense, I think, but that's also an advantage because people also just complain about things from time to time. And so I think it's good to have like an outlet for that as well, to also like be a bit sarcastic from time to time. Or of course it's also something where you can like another channel where you can say, oh hey, we have a new paper accepted, or oh hey, we have a new grant or something like that, and that's nice. But from time to time, I've posted this sort of stuff myself, and also see other people posting it when something doesn't work. So seen a lot of discussion about this sort of like success culture in academia, which like gives people a false impression of. So everybody's just all the time shouting out how great they are and what success they have, and my grant just got rejected, so I must be a complete disaster. And so I've at least gotten the impression that on Twitter it's a little more honest, where people also say, okay, I wrote a grant application and it got completely destroyed by the reviewers, and so I probably will just have to try again. And that's maybe something that's also like help, especially junior researchers also get, I think, a little more confidence from that, to see, oh, I'm not alone in getting like three papers rejected in a row or something like that, because it happens to everybody. It's just not something people talk about so much. And there are like, at least the part of Twitter which I see is being a bit more open about that. And I think that's a good thing, because otherwise you just tend to kind of brush things under the carpet that should actually be public knowledge as well, kind of. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's a very good point, and I completely agree. And since, I mean, that I probably also find one of the most refreshing things on Twitter, and maybe while you're talking, I'm also thinking, maybe on Twitter, we don't necessarily need to be so serious, because then when I try to, there's the new paper, let's promote it, and I'm sitting there and I already know, oh, that will take half an hour till I've got my tweet out. So what is the key message? Maybe some visual, what hashtags, so whom to tag and whatsoever. And I'm already getting discouraged and do it instead nothing at all. So maybe out a bit. One last thing I wanted to talk about very briefly. So you said you also have a web page.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us a bit about that? Because what I see usually, particularly, let's say, in the mid-level of seniority mm-hmm. in academia, I see very little people having a web page, actually. So most of the time I see either like kind of the seniors, which didn't mm-hmm. do it on their own, but paid someone to do so, mm-hmm. or the juniors, which are more tech-savvy and set it up on their own. But in the middle, there is a bit of a gap, is my perception, mm-hmm. at least. So how did you do it? Why? And mm-hmm. how did you make it happen?
So I think that's kind of so if you just look at the webpage, then I'm probably still in the junior people camp, because I started this when I was like just getting started as a PhD student, and I've just kept it going since. So mm-hmm. Kind of being a computer scientist is a bit of an advantage here, because it's actually running on my own server, and so I kind of already have that server, and so it's not actually that big of a deal to put on an extra web page for my own stuff. And it's actually looking a little kind of little late 90s, early 2000s style by now, I guess. So it probably might need a visual refresh, but that's also something I'm not kind of getting around to. But I do like write new stuff from time to time, and it's also just like the occasional blog post that's too long for Twitter, or just like collections of little side projects, and of course publication lists and so on. But the main reason why this actually, if I were starting right now, then I would probably not have a web page. It's basically just because I've already had it for so long that I wouldn't want to give it up now. And it's right now it's relatively low maintenance, I would say, because everything's set up anyway. I just like do the occasional updates, I don't know, every 8 weeks or so at most, some little thing when there's a new paper coming out or something, or a little thing I've written or something. But it's not very active, I have to say. But because I've had it for so long, I probably will have it for another 20 years or so, and it will probably still look very outdated in 20 years. So, but that's something I'm not really getting around to actually give it like a proper facelift at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's also merit in having things a bit of more old school looking. Yeah. Kind of a signal stage we're coming from, but
exactly.
So you somehow hinted at. So nowadays, you probably wouldn't get a web page started anymore.
Yeah, I guess it's. I'm not sure. So if I wouldn't have the so as I said in the very beginning, I'm kind of trying to build things that are less centralized, and I'm also trying to follow my own advice here. So that's also why I'm running my own server. But in the end, for example, I'm still on Twitter, and also due to the amount of kind of time that you need to invest to get something like this up and running in the first place. I mean, for a simple web page, it's maybe not that much effort, but still, I would probably, I think if I would have to start from scratch, I wouldn't do it right now, because I have to thank my younger self from 10 years ago for setting up that server, because he took his time and did that, and now I can kind of still use it. If it was the other way around, it probably wouldn't work now.
Okay, I mean, even though nowadays you probably can also do linear solutions, so particularly with GitHub pages, I find it makes it very
that's true. That's true, yeah.
And all the templates around. The question is for sure, I'm asking myself the question as well. So what is this web page actually for? Is it basically an online CV? So that's me, that's my history up to now, that are my papers. And if yes, is that really worth it? Or should I just put up a link to my LinkedIn or something like that? Mm. or should it be something more? And I also didn't really figure it out. I obviously also want to have my blog, but then again, I find it hard to keep like kind of enough content on a blog in a regular frequency to, I guess, to be interesting for anyone to follow thoroughly.
Yeah. So, I mean, right now I've been writing a little blog post that's actually like related to research somehow. And what I was planning to do is then just put the link to that on Twitter again, because I'm pretty sure that just about nobody is actually like really following my webpage directly. So I would just like put on Twitter, hey, I've written a little blog post. If you're curious, here's the link. Because this, so at least my webpage is like really this self-built thing from 10 years ago. It doesn't actually have like these sort of subscription things and so on. So it's really rather bare bones, I would say. And for that reason, I kind of use that for when I kind of feel like it, and then just announce that to the broader public on Twitter, I guess. So that's sort of the in an ideal world, then basically everything is being used for what it's good for. But that's also, of course, kind of due to how do you call that, historic inertia, because I'm kind of used to doing it like this now. And if Twitter shuts down or for whatever reason, then it would probably take a long time for me to find some alternative. I mean, I've kind of had this, also one reason why I'm actually working in this area, and my research is in that area, is because I've noticed so many instances where Google actually pulled some kind of service out from under me, so to speak, because I was, for example, using Google Reader for a very long time. Some people might actually remember that. And then Google just shut it down from one week to the next. And I was really annoyed. And that was actually the point where I started then to build my own stuff again. And for quite a time, I was thinking that it's a waste of time. But now I think it's actually somehow worth uphill slope to go over to get to that point. And so, yeah.
Okay, great. One last thing now in my mind. So that's how I like to end it. So given that we're trying to do our best, sometimes we succeed, sometimes not. We develop some best practices. But I'm wondering, do you have any project you are working on at the moment in terms of, or not necessarily, it can be a project, a solution, a resolution, an attempt, or whatever, how to push the way you disseminate your research? Do you have anything in a pipeline, any project?
Specifically for our research, hard to say. So I'm kind of talking with a couple of people about like how to kind of merge this old kind of old publication format of having papers and the new world of GitHub and open source software, and how to kind of find something that's in the middle between both. But this is not yet at a point where we can really make it public. So in a sense, it's a resolution to try and build something new that's kind of like merging the best of both worlds, hopefully. But that's really still something that's rather in its early stages. So there's not too much yet which I can talk about, but that's at least an idea that I want to continue following.
Okay, so somehow a fast and efficient process to, as you said, get the best of both worlds. Have it kind of a nice academic paper, but then maybe a bit shortened down, open access, maybe with a bit of all this digital functionalities that you have, interactive visualization and whatnot.
Which is one of
the big things I find so practical nowadays. This interactive visualization, which makes people explore your research on their own, which you just can't have in the normal paper format. Now, that all sounds super exciting, but then I guess then we just have to follow your webpage and look for updates. If you send me the link, obviously, we'll put in the podcast notes a link to it.
I will do that.
Okay, great. And then I would say thank you so much for being our guest today.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. It was really fun.